Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Annie Dewani? Annie Dewani was born in Sweden on March 12, 1982. Her parents were of Indian descent. At one time, they lived in Uganda. They had sought asylum in Sweden in the early 1970s after fleeing Uganda. The president of that country expelled all Asians who were living there. Annie eventually graduated from college with a degree in engineering and worked for the telecommunications company, Ericsson. Annie decided it was time to find a romantic interest. She wanted her partner to be both wealthy and Indian, and thought that she would have a better chance of finding him in London. In May of 2009, she traveled to London and stayed with her cousin. She met a man named Shriyan Dewani. He was just what she was looking for. He was wealthy, Indian, and she found him to be attractive. They connected on other points as well. For instance, Shriyan's mother had lived in Uganda. They started a long-distance romantic relationship. In February of 2010, Annie moved to London. 2 months later, the couple became engaged. The couple did not always get along. They even broke up at one point before Annie moved to London, but eventually they decided to continue with their plan of getting married. On October 19, 2010, they married in Mumbai, India. It was an extravagant, elegant, and expensive wedding. It was their intent to have another ceremony in the United Kingdom in 2011. I guess all of their friends were not able to fly to India to be at their official wedding. They briefly returned to the UK before leaving for their honeymoon. On November 7, 2010, the couple flew to Cape Town, South Africa. They then flew to Kruger National Park, returning to Cape Town on November 12. Their taxi driver from the airport to the hotel was a man named Zola Tango. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On November 13, 2010, the couple hired Zola Tango to be their unofficial tour guide. So he had driven them again from the airport to the hotel, and I guess Shriyan liked him, so he thought, okay, I'll have this guy work as my tour guide. Apparently, Tango was okay with making money on the side, like with his official taxi job, but also after hours. Reportedly, Shriyan thought that using Tango would be more affordable than using the hotel's car service. Tango drove the couple to a number of places in his taxi, a Volkswagen minivan, including a restaurant. When the couple was finished eating, Tango picked them up. For some reason, Tango then drove them to a very dangerous part of town, an area so dangerous that many locals were afraid to go there in the day. They would not even think about traveling there at night. This area had averaged one murder every 2.5 days over the last several years. It was not immediately clear why Tango drove them to that area. There were different stories as to who requested venturing there. At one point on their journey, two armed men carjacked the Volkswagen. One carjacker climbed into the driver's seat, and another right next to Shriyan and Annie. They robbed Shrien, taking his watch, phone, wallet, and cash. Shrien hid Annie's expensive engagement ring in the seats of the vehicle. The carjackers did not get that item. About 17 minutes later, the carjackers threw Shrien out of the vehicle as well, saying they would release his wife separately. Shrien ran through the streets, knocking on doors until somebody finally called the police. Annie was found dead in the back seat of the taxi at 7:50 a.m. the next day. She had been shot one time. The bullet struck her hand, chest, and neck. The neck wound would prove to be fatal. In addition, Annie had bruises on her body, including on her inner leg, but the police believed that no sex-related crime had occurred. Some of her personal property had been stolen, including her diamond bracelet, phone, purse, and watch. The authorities believed this was a straightforward case. Annie was killed by armed carjackers. Her body was released to her husband, who returned to the United Kingdom. Later, her body was cremated. During the investigation, the police found a palm print in the Volkswagen. Over the next few days, the police arrested two attackers, Kolail Minjeni and Swamidoda Kwabi. They also arrested a hotel receptionist named Monde Malumbo. For some reason, the three conspirators were allowed to talk to one another. I guess it was part of South Africa's new Get Your Story Straight program to reduce convictions or something. I can imagine a poster hanging on the wall in the jail. Don't want to stay here? Get your story straight. The initial story was that they were trying to rob Annie. During the struggle, she was shot. Murder was not their objective. None of the initial confessions made any mention of any other conspirators. This was simply a robbery gone bad. Not long after this, their stories changed. Now they were saying that Shrien had orchestrated the attack. It was a murder-for-hire plot. The taxi driver, Zola Tongo, initially claimed that he was just a victim of this carjacking. He had nothing to do with it. A few days later, his story changed as well. He said that Shrien was behind the crime. Tongo and Kwabi were offered favorable plea bargains in exchange for their testimony against Shrien Diwani. They were sentenced to 18 and 25 years respectively. Life in prison would have been the expected sentence if they were convicted in a trial. The hotel receptionist, Malumbo, was granted full immunity. The fourth conspirator, Minjeni, decided to take his case to trial. He claimed that the police had suffocated him with a plastic bag in order to facilitate a confession. He said he was not one of the carjackers. He had an alibi. In November of 2012, he was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison. He died of a brain tumor about 2 years later. Shrien Diwani vigorously tried to avoid being extradited from England to South Africa, saying that he had PTSD and depression. His attorney said he wouldn't survive in a South African prison. Shrien was finally extradited to South Africa in April of 2014. He was charged with murder, kidnapping, robbery, obstruction, and conspiracy. The three remaining conspirators testified against him. Again, one had died in prison, but they could not get their story straight. In addition, Tongo and Kwabi had fabricated telephone calls and text messages and refused to identify a fifth conspirator, who they referred to in audio recordings. So somebody was responsible in this crime who was never caught. When the prosecution finished presenting their case, the defense argued for a dismissal, which the judge granted. The judge said that Tonga was the only witness who could connect Shrien to the conspiracy. His testimony was filled with inconsistencies and lies. There was no way to know where the lies ended and the truth began. The immunity for Malumbo was revoked due to him committing perjury. Later, it was determined that he could not be prosecuted.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. Save 20% at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Now moving to my analysis. Even though the case against Shriyan Dhawani was ultimately dismissed, some people still have questions about his guilt. Was he actually guilty? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that he was guilty, starting with the inculpatory evidence. It appears as though Shriyan had not been honest with Annie. Shriyan was gay and apparently never told her. Several male prostitutes came forward after Shriyan was accused and implied that he was into BDSM-style sex. He was a submissive. Shriyan eventually admitted on the stand that he was living a double life. Guests at the wedding indicated that the two seemed detached during their ceremony, like neither one was really invested in what was happening. Annie texted friends right after she was married, suggesting that she was unhappy. Perhaps she had made a mistake. I guess it didn't take her too long to realize this mistake. Shriyan made the unusual decision of hiring a taxi driver to be a tour guide. He had a number of unusual contacts with Tongo. For example, he met with Tongo in the parking lot of the hotel for a 10-minute conversation. This was prior to the murder. The day before the murder, he went for a drive with Tongo. During the drive right before the murder, the police said that Shriyan was texting Tongo. Prior to Annie's body being located, Shriyan met Tongo at the hotel. Shriyan was captured on video surveillance looking around, as if he was trying to locate the cameras. 2 days after the murder, the two met again at the hotel. Shriyan was recorded with a white package or envelope in his possession. Tongo was seen leaving with that same item. Shriyan did not appear to be honest with the police initially. He changed his story about whose idea it was to go into the dangerous area of town. He initially lied about hiding the engagement ring, and he had different stories about how he escaped from the vehicle. Shriyan left South Africa just 3 days after the murder. Reportedly, he was detached during Annie's funeral, like he didn't want to have anything to do with it. Some of the elements of the crime don't make sense. For example, why would the carjackers let Shriyan go, only to later kill Annie? How did the carjackers know that the couple was carrying expensive items? It seems clear that the taxi driver was in on it, and Shriyan is the one who selected the taxi driver. Now moving to the exculpatory factors. It doesn't make sense that Shriyan would enter into a murder-for-hire plot with a taxi driver he had only just met. The taxi driver claimed that Shriyan was going to pay him about £1,400. This is less than he made in a month. Why would the taxi driver be willing to commit first-degree murder for someone he just met for such a small amount of money? If Shriyan was in on the crime, why did he hide the engagement ring? He could have simply told Annie not to bring the ring. The bullet that killed Annie was fired at an unusual angle, almost like whoever shot her had been in a physical struggle with her. The carjackers may have been attempting to perpetrate an assault of a sexual nature when they shot her, which explains why they kicked Shriyan out of the vehicle. Even though the police accused Shriyan of sending text messages to Tongo during the drive, they could not produce any records to support this claim. The known conspirators only implicated Shriyan as the mastermind after failing to mention him during their initial confessions. The government of South Africa had a strong motive to accuse Shriyan. They had concerns that the homicide would hurt tourism. They wanted to change the narrative from violent carjackers kill innocent tourists to cheating husband arranges for his wife to be murdered by manipulating innocent locals into a conspiracy. When considering all the evidence, do I think that Shriyan was guilty? No, I don't think he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and I don't think he was guilty in reality. Zola Tonga was the only person who could tie him to the crime, and he lied several times and had inconsistent stories. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. When Annie started looking for a romantic partner, She really wanted somebody like her. She wanted a man who would be acceptable to her family. When she found Shrien, there were clear signs that he was not a suitable companion, but because he was exactly what she wanted in so many other ways, she tried to make it work. By the time they arrived in South Africa for their honeymoon, she was already thinking about divorce. Shrien was also preoccupied with other thoughts. Reportedly, he was on gay dating websites immediately after Annie was killed. They both probably knew this wasn't going to work out. The couple was not paying attention to safety concerns. Again, they were highly distracted. They were both wearing a number of expensive items of jewelry. They were not being cautious about who saw that. The taxi driver took one look at the couple and figured they would be easy to rob. He contacted the hotel receptionist, who in turn located the carjackers. They executed the robbery without any intent to kill, but during the robbery, and potentially during an attempted sexual assault of Annie, they shot and killed her. The government of South Africa did not like the optics of this case, so they pressured the conspirators into implicating Shrien. In the end, the same poor organizational skills that haunted the crime haunted their testimony. It became clear Shrien was not involved. One of the themes that emerges in this case is how Annie Dewani was betrayed by everybody. Her new husband was not being honest with her. Her taxi driver arranged to have her robbed and maybe to have her killed. The hotel receptionist assisted in this endeavor. And of course, the carjackers murdered her. The last time I want to talk about is how South African officials didn't think their strategy through, if in fact they did encourage the conspirators to falsely implicate Shrien. Homicide of a tourist understandably hurts tourism. One of the main objects when somebody goes to another country to visit would be returning alive. Returning in a non-alive state would be much less desirable. If the officials had done nothing, the story would have been four conspirators kill innocent woman on her honeymoon. South Africa can be a dangerous place. If they had been successful in framing Shrien, the story would have been, come to South Africa to meet all of your murder-for-hire needs. We have plenty of people willing to commit homicide for a nominal fee. I guess this would stimulate tourism, but is that really a good strategy? It still means that South Africa is a dangerous place. With the case against Shrien being dismissed, neither of those two stories were promoted. Instead, the message to tourists was this: come to South Africa, your spouse will get murdered, and you'll get framed for killing her. We know you're innocent, and your case may get dismissed. Oh, by the way, our prisons are not survivable to outsiders. It never occurred to South African officials that the narrative they painted was even worse than if they just decided not to interfere at all. They should have just left the story alone. Often the truth is a better way to go.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes, I've traced heroic acts of bravery, and I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.